Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, folks. Welcome to Quiet Earth Radio on Blog Talk Radio. This is Will Coy. Obviously, the show, again, we're dedicated to the post-apocalyptic genre and everything, movies, books, TVs, you name it. We enjoy talking about post-apocalyptic whatever's out there. And tonight we're going to have a guest, special guest, Steve Glenn. He started a film, a movie in 1984 called Radio Free Steve. The film is set in a post-apocalyptic setting after World War III, and it's an interesting movie. It has an interesting story in the making of the movie, and we're thankful to have Steve Glenn on with us tonight. Now, let me go ahead and get my co-host here on here, Quiet Earth, and we'll bring Steve on in just a moment. Hey, Quiet Earth, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Well, Coy, how you doing, baby?
I'm doing great, and yourself?
I'm doing good, man. I'm pumped for tonight. This movie was hilarious, like absurdly hilarious. And you know, me and Steve, we talked before, and we traded some emails. And I think he's actually sitting in his mother's kitchen right now in his underwear on the phone with us.
Well, now that is whoa! That sounds explosive. All right, let's bring Steve on right now. Let's see. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show tonight.
Thank you for having me. I just want to say I really appreciate it, you having me on after all this time. It's, any kind of attention feels really, really special to me. And, I mean, I'm not starved for attention, but let's just say I haven't eaten in a while. So I kind of feel like that. I got butterflies in my stomach right now.
Okay. Well, as I said at the beginning, Radio Free Steve is pretty. It's pretty interesting little flick you got here. Now, won't you first of all tell the people what Radio Free Steve the movie is about? Okay.
Radio Free Steve is a post-apocalyptic adventure and love story comedy set in the distant future, 1998 or so. At least when I made it, it was the distant future, and now it's the past. Mm-hmm. But in 1984, I was pretty sure that the world was going to be blown up by the end of the century, and I'm surprised it hasn't happened. But I went on a road trip with my friend and Dirk and my then girlfriend, and we just shot this movie on the road, making it up as we go, flying by the seat of our pants. And I was real enthusiastic, and some of the people I was with weren't as enthusiastic, but I tried to make them be enthusiastic and feel it whether they wanted to or not.
So you had to motivate everybody and keep everything going. First of all, Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from, and what got you into in making this movie?
Yes, I was originally from West Texas, San Angelo, Texas, and then I moved to Dallas and Fort Worth for a few years, and went to DeVry Institute.
Okay.
And got a 2-year degree, correspondence degree in TV broadcasting.
Okay.
And then, but at the time, and this is in the early '80s, I was more into radio kind of at first, and then I segued into television, and I thought, well, I'm doing TV, why not just make a movie? Because we have these portable video cameras that are, you know, only $10,000 or so, and I had access to them. And I was like, well, why don't I just borrow my mom's van and do it? I mean, you look at some of those movies like that first Mad Max movie, that those guys, those turkeys didn't know what they were doing, and I figured if they could do it, well, I could do it, you know?
Right. And, yeah, I hear you. And I admire you for that. We're going to get into a little bit more, but obviously you got the equipment together. That's another question I want to ask you about the equipment. But you took this project on and you did it. And a lot of people have a lot of dreams to do certain things, or you know, want to get up and do it, and they never do it. So actually, you did it. So like I said, I admire you for doing that. What you said you had the equipment. Now you borrowed the equipment from the TV. How'd you borrow the equipment from the TV station?
Well, I just took it home one day after work, and then didn't show up for work the next day.
I heard you actually blackmailed one of your professors at DeVry so you can get some equipment.
Well, wink, wink.
Yeah.
You know? Well, there was all kinds of equipment involved. There were cars, and my friend Dirk had his Camaro Z28, so we used that. And I had my mom's Vandura, Chevy Vandura, this really, really neat customized van that had a kitchen sink in the back. But I took out the sink and put in a reel-to-reel and a transmitter and a little small transmitter, really just a modified Citizen Band rig. And we just upped the modulation on it so that it was kind of high powered, could do about a 2.8 mile. I measured it 2.8 mile broadcast, and so I was doing a broadcast, you know, as we were driving out and out across Texas, out west Texas, out into New Mexico and beyond, all the way to California. Well, that was.
So you're saying there might actually be someone in West Texas who heard a pirated radio broadcast like over 20 years ago, and they might still be sitting there today trying to tune into you?
Well, we had about a 2.8 diameter rate or radius radial broadcast range, and but out there where we were in Marfa, there's probably about 3 people every 50 miles. So I don't know who heard it. I think the police heard it because they were trying to nab us. And there were some close calls there. But I ended up, I know one guy heard it who was this artist guy, ham radio. He had a ham radio rig and he heard it. His name was Ronald Judd in Marfa. They're in Marfa, Texas, where they shot that movie Giant.
Mm-hmm.
And he let us shoot out of his place, which is real neat, on the way out. And that was pretty incredible. He had this, it was real futuristic looking out there. He had all these, like, boxes in this room. I don't know how to describe it, except it looked like something from the future. And I thought, well, I'm making a movie about the future, so why not shoot in this futuristic setting? And he said, okay, and we did, and it was pretty, that guy's real famous now. I think he's got stuff in the, like, hanging up in museums in Canada and whatnot.
So was that the scene where you're at, like, Ricky's compound? Where they have all those
That's
cubes
exactly
and they're like,
right.
Don't touch anything, and it looks like they're like cooking crystal meth or something.
Well, they didn't have crystal meth back then. It was a pure mescaline and LSD were the interesting things they had go. But that's a whole other thing.
Wait, didn't they have crack cocaine back then? I was like six then.
No,
I gotta ask.
We had powder. I mean, they had. There was a round powder cocaine. I think. Not that I could afford it. I mean, I spent all this money on this movie. I spent 2 years pedicuring at the Fancy Nails just to raise money to make this movie, you know? Robert Rodriguez, he gave his blood. I got a toe fungus infection on my fingers.
What? What?
Raising money, you know? Trying to... working at the Fancy Nails because my mom's friend had a Fancy Nails.
How long did you decide, to the time you said, okay, I'm going to make a movie, to the time you actually got it all together, how long did it take you to get the money, to get your cast members, the people, what'd you have to do to get it together to do it?
Right. Well, it happened real quick. It was a coming together of just, It was like a cosmic convergence, I have to say. I mean, I'm not religious or anything, but it felt like all the things were being put in place before me. So it happened real fast. I came up with the idea, you know, about me as a radio pirate in the future, you know, broadcasting across the apocalyptic wasteland, broadcasting a future of hope to anybody who'd listen, and killing mutants on the way. And,
yeah.
Hold on a second. Mom, I'm on. I'm trying to do. I'm staying in my mom's garage at the moment because she's. My wife kicked me out of her place. And anyway, mom. She's trying to build a cabinet. She's a little old. She smoked one too many Marlboro.
She sounds like she's fired up tonight.
Has she been drinking whiskey?
She's been drinking Wild Turkey.
Ooh.
And,
yeah.
Oh, man.
I don't like you when you're on Wild Turkey. So if you... Anyway, please just try to be quiet.
I thought it sounded like a cat at first.
Well, there's a cat too. He lives down here, and the whole place smells like cat pee. I'm living in like a cat pee war zone. It's like a slaughterhouse. Anyway, so it came together real fast. I wrote the script up and immediately chucked it out the window as soon as we were on the road, and I realized that nothing was going to go as planned. Dirk was on board, my good friend Dirk at the time, who would later betray me. He was on board, and my girlfriend Trish, who played Sheena, the love interest, who she was a gorgeous young thing. She flat-chested but gorgeous. That's what I got to say about that. But she was sweet, but she turned into a demon when I took her on this trip, and she didn't want to go. And
oh, really?
I knew she didn't want to go, but I wanted her to go, and I knew she'd be real good, and that if I didn't have a girl in the movie, nobody would watch it.
Right.
And
well,
the only girl I knew was Trish, this girl I was seeing. So I got her to go, and she betrayed me too, ultimately, in the middle of the thing. And I mean, I'm over it. I'm over all that. But
I would hope so. It's been like 20 years, right?
Who's counting? Seems like yesterday.
So let me ask you, did you film this I take it from reading on your website and from what you said, did you literally just leave from Austin, Texas, and you drove to LA? So you were just filming this movie and this journey,
and
it began in Austin, right?
That's right. It started in Austin, and we went, you know, hither and thither, around Austin, and we ran over all the mutants. This is an interesting piece of trivia. If you see the movie, just about all the mutants we killed were actually people from Austin, and we shot that in Austin. Around Austin, you know, out in the country. But we left Austin, me and Trish and Dirk, and a couple of kids who I knew from the Civic Theater, and we went out to West Texas and shot out near Big Bend, real pretty country. And we went over to Marfa. Have you seen the Marfa lights or heard about them at least? There's a part in the movie where we were trying to film the Marfa lights, but it's dark, so you can't really see them.
Yeah, I thought you went to Roswell for that shot or something.
You thought what?
I thought you guys had gone to Roswell, New Mexico for that shot.
Well, this is before anybody heard about Roswell. There are the Marfa lights, and they're real thing. They're a real thing out there, and I've seen them. We all saw them. They were like I could see them like dancing lights out in the distance, and like going, you know, like somebody holding the lantern. But there were too many of them, and there's nobody out there. And you know, the scientists say that they think they are headlights, or maybe like swamp gas. I mean, it's the desert. What's wrong?
You know, I have heard of that.
Yeah, it's a real phenomenon. I advise everybody who goes out to West Texas to go see the Marfa lights. It's pretty neat. But I think, here's my theory, and I'm not the only one. I actually read this somewhere. But I think it's true. It fits with what I saw. I think they're the spirits of Comanche Indians who used to roam out there and scalp and stuff. And the reason I think that is I had a little dream catcher that I would hang up in my mom's cutlass. I borrowed her cutlass. And there was a dream catcher in there, and I'm not making this up, there was blue fire, like, sparkling on the dream catcher hanging from the rearview mirror. And I think, I wouldn't have been surprised if, like, a herd of spectral buffalo ran through my car at that moment. That wouldn't have surprised me a bit.
You did previously mention something about LSD and mescaline, right?
What?
You did previously mention something about LSD and mescaline, right?
There was a little bit of that, but not at that moment. that wasn't me.
I was dead sober then.
I mean, I'm a straight shooter. You know, I like country music. And I'm a Christian, but...
You had an unexplained moment that time. That's, you know...
That was a real thing we saw we'd had a few beers.
Yeah. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
You said at the beginning of the show you weren't a religious man, and now you're saying a Christian.
Well, I go to church.
I think that qualifies you. I mean, that's...
Sometimes.
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. What's the highest moment? The highest moment during filming during this journey, and tell me what was the lowest moment during your journey.
Well, let's see. The highest moment was probably off camera when Trish finally got with me. It was when we're on the way. It was in a hotel in between. It was in Las Cruces at a hotel.
Okay.
Motel, anyway. And because we splurged and got a motel. And but then the lowest moment was probably, well, there were a lot of low moments. Let me see. Can I give you a list of low moments?
Well,
yeah.
Okay, go with it.
The first low moment happened at the White Sands, New Mexico.
Yeah.
We went out there to go shoot some scenes because it is like an apocalyptic wasteland out there, but with like kids sledding on pieces of cardboard down these white hills. You know, it's all dirt. It's like this white gypsy dirt.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a crossbow. I have a crossbow in the whole movie, right? And a angel blade. I mean, what do you call them? A butterfly blade. And those are Steve's only weapons. No, he doesn't need a gun because he's got a crossbow. Because, you know, one thing I learned from Mad Max is that, you know, or Road Warrior, is that, you know, bullets are hard to come by in the future. And so, because your gunpowder gets wet and stuff, and so you got it. It's all crossbows. So Steve has a crossbow, and I had one there for shooting. It wasn't. I mean, it was a real crossbow, but I wasn't loaded with bolts. But the ranger there didn't know that,
uh-huh.
And she pulled a gun on me.
Oh.
And she wanted to throw me in jail.
Wow.
For having a weapon on a federal property because it's federal, it's a national park. I did not know that.
Yeah.
It was embarrassing, you know, to have that happen in front of the crew. I thought I was going to jail, so I kind of,
yeah.
I mean, I could say this now because it's been a while, but I peed in my pants. And it was 115 degrees, and I was already sweating. So I smelled.
Oh man,
I smelled like a horse in heat. You know,
and I didn't
make things any better.
So she wasn't all about you filming
that
movie.
Girl. It was a lady ranger, yeah. And I think she wanted me. That made Trish even more mad than she already was. And that was one low part. I got away with it, though. I lied and said I was making a student film. And got away with that. And then shortly after that, that was when I had a fallout with my girlfriend, who was also my co-star. We got in a real bad fight. Some of it I left is actually on camera. And she broke up and started crying.
Uh-oh.
And said I wasn't treating her right, this and that. And I won, you know, I had a plan that I was going to, I wanted to go out to Los Angeles and make movies. And
yeah.
She just was, you know, her head wasn't there.
Well, now you said you picked somebody up too, or something. You described him as a preppy,
yeah.
Going to some Buddhist compound or something.
Well,
and
I think that was her excuse.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not a psychologist. Right.
Yeah.
What's that word? What is it?
Psychologist.
We call them guidance counselors.
The shrink.
That's
a good one.
That's right. That's one of those Woody Allen words.
Yeah.
That's how I think of it. We picked up this guy on the side of the road, and he wanted to go to some Buddhist, you know, commune where they were trying to levitate and crud. And I was like, well, that sounds like a perfect, you know, it reminded me of stuff I'd seen in other movies. So I was like, well,
mm-hmm.
You know, this could be a perfect moment where he comes and finds like a little pocket of oasis in this desert wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
somewhere where he can get away from it all, you know, and, you know, maybe, you know, do some yoga, you know, instead of probably get away from the mutants for a little bit.
Right.
Because there's mutants chasing everywhere they go. And she kissed him. She kissed this guy that we picked up on the side of the road who was some weasel. He was a weasel.
Yeah, he looked like a weasel.
He had an Azad.
Yeah, I've seen the movie.
But I think she did it. I don't think that guy was better than me. I think she just did it to, you know, kind of get back at me for forcing her to come on this thing that she didn't want to do.
And it sounds like her heart just wasn't in it, you know. That's what it sounds like to me, you know. But
I don't think she has the heart.
Yeah, I heard that. Well, look here. We do have a caller on here, so I'm going to bring him on with a question. I want to remind people who are listening live, our number is 646-716-7562 if you want to call in and answer a question or a comment. So just hold on one moment. Let me see. We've got, area code 970. Welcome to Quiet Earth Radio. Area code 970.
Hello. Oh, I'm not the caller.
Okay. That's okay, Steve. We'll put him on. I got another one here.
I'll give you a caller.
That's weird. Area code 559. This is Quiet Earth Radio.
Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Hello. Hi. I have a question for Steve.
Okay, go right ahead.
Steve, I think your movie sounds incredibly awesome. I'm going to check it out. I'm going to order off your website when I get a chance. I just wanted to ask you, what do you think this movie would, what does this movie say to people nowadays? I mean, if you made the movie like 25 years ago, I'm sure it says a lot about back then.
I think it says, it has a lot to say about the need for world peace, and also has a lot to say about how much mutants are, you know, we don't want mutants around, because if we let, you know, if the world blows up and people turn into mutants, we're better off just killing them, you know, putting them out of their misery. And I think says don't try to make a movie with your friends and your girlfriend, because it may not work out the way you thought. I think that's the message. And but also there's a message of hope, which is that if you get your voice out there, and if you're real, if you speak from a real true place, you know, in the bottom of your feet or whatever, I think people want to hear a message of hope. That's why I'm going to vote for Giuliani this year. Next year.
Well, man, I mean, with that whole, like world peace thing, you really could have been on, like, the American Beauty pageant or whatever.
I mean, I'm not a hippie. This is the mistake people think. It's like, you say world peace, and I just say, you know, we're better off without nuclear annihilation. Although there are some good things, too, which is like, you know, there's a lot of free stuff out there to get after a nuclear war, you know. Everything's just there for the taking, which is kind of neat. And
just got to wait for that Half-Life thing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you gotta have a Geiger counter, you know, and you got to check your water, make sure it's not irradiated.
Yeah.
And you got to I think also the message is don't resort to cannibalism, no matter what. because it's not the way to go. I think it's wrong. I think I will take a stand right now and say I'm against cannibalism.
We should put that in the Constitution.
That's exactly right. I think an amendment saying no cannibals.
Well,
no,
I believe
marriage and no cannibals.
Yeah, well, any post-nuclear, post-apocalyptic society culture is going to have to quickly, you know, learn how to become an agrarian, you know, society. You know, you're going to have to quickly learn how to grow stuff, you know.
Well, you can't grow because of nuclear winter.
Well, that's, well, I hear you.
Mom, I'm on.
Hello?
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 Hold on, sorry.
Is this Radio Shack?
Mom, get off.
Oh, God damn it. Steve, get on the phone. I got to call the Radio Shack.
Use my StarTech. She doesn't. Just use StarTech. She doesn't.
Mom wants to be on the show too, doesn't she?
She gets like this. It's late for her. She should be in bed. You should be in bed.
Well,
you should be in bed.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let me, before we go answer any more questions, let me bring this other, I got another caller on here, and I believe they called back. Let me try this again. Just a second, Steve. Just a second here.
Mom?
Yeah, area code 970. This
what?
Is Quiet Earth Radio.
Yep, this is Elliot.
Hey there. You got a question for Steve?
Oh, I just wanted to first say how much I enjoyed the film. It was great. I absolutely loved it. And I was just curious if there was plans for any more shorts or movies from Steve in the future coming up.
Well, that's a big question. If this movie takes off, you know, I mean, it hasn't taken off in 20 years, but if it takes off now, if there's somebody out there with the, you know, couple $100.
Got an investment.
You know, and some.
I can let you borrow 20.
Yeah. All right. Well, there we go. Maybe we can start a fund on the internet. I was going to make a YouTube video last summer, and don't know what happened with that. But I could. I mean, I still feel like I have the talent. I did think about making a sequel once upon a time. You know, if this thing had worked out, I was going to make a sequel called Video Free Steve Beyond Astrodome. And it was about the moving from radio to video, which I thought made a lot of sense. And but now I think I would call it 2012, The Return of Steve Aquaddle.
What?
I think 2012 is a real big deal.
Well, that's supposedly the beginning of the new millennium on the Mayan calendar, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been to Chichen Itza, and yeah, there might. Which, for your listeners who don't know, Chichen Itza is Mexico somewhere and in the jungle, and it's, I think it's Mayan, and they've got like drawn like carvings and stuff, and like a big, real big temple where they used to cut people's hearts out, and
Apocalypto
stuff.
Yeah, you got that out of that movie.
Right, that Mel Gibson thing. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But I was there. I went down there, and they have like a court where they play balls. They play with their balls on this court. And then, 2012 is a real big deal. Everybody, well, not everybody. I mean, most of my friends are, you know, born again, and they say it's going to happen any second. You know, they say, they like to quote the Bible and say that He will come as a thief in the night, which I think means that I lock my doors at night, but I think it means the dudes might come in your house and steal your stuff at any time. So you got to be ready. I keep a shotgun by my bed.
I keep a gun on me at all times.
Exactly. Well, you never. I mean, I'm ready. If it goes down, I'm ready. I mean, I've been ready for 20 years. I'm still ready. I've got a bunker. It's
I got an RV outside, man. It's got solar panels. It's self-running. I mean, it's impervious to EMP blasts. I've got a load of firearms and canned goods. You know, I can bug out right any moment.
Is that EMP?
So I'm with you.
Is the EMP blast, is that like telekinetic children?
Electromagnetic pulse.
Yeah, that's what, from like when you have a nuke, like everything is at a certain radius, all the electronics get fried.
Oh,
and like
right.
Most cars are electronic.
Fries out all the circuit boards.
Psychic powers and can, you know, try to bust down your door with their minds. It can stop them.
Yeah.
Proof.
Carry guns. Guns are good.
So what? You can't read your mind and tell you to do stuff that you don't want to do, or tell you what stuff you got in your house, you know?
Well, I think that's the mutants.
Right.
That's like the X-Men.
One quarter of the population will become mutants that eat people, flesh-eating mutants. One quarter will become blonde-haired, blue-eyed psychics.
Sounds like Nazis.
One quarter will be like lesbian women living in Shangri-La, and one quarter will be the rest of us trying to wipe the other three quarters out of existence and take back to Earth and bring back civilization, you know, and going in and digging around Library of Congress for books that we like and trying to rescue civilization from itself. You know?
Kind of salvage.
Man, that sounds so cool. I want to live in that world. I really do. I mean, I sit on my couch armed at night, and, you know, I always think something's going to come in, you know, the big plate glass window behind me, and, you know, I just want a chance to shoot and kill something. Bring it on, man.
Well, you should come out to Texas, and we'll go hunting.
they got hunting up here in Colorado where I live, you know.
I'm thinking
something
with two arms and two legs.
Hold on. God dang it.
Is this Radio Shack?
God dang it. Give me that. Give me that.
Steve, get off the goddamn phone.
Give me that.
She
is. I love her to death. I love my mama to death, but.
Ground up night.
This is my life. You know, my advice is never to make a movie because it will.
Well, you should put your mom in your next movie. I think she would be a hoot.
She's a wild card.
She
was a topless dancer for a while, so she in the 50s.
Is that right?
It was with pasties because they didn't do real full topless.
Yeah.
You know, and it was more like, I mean, I've seen stuff on the internet that makes her look, what she did look like something you'd see on Disney Channel.
Yeah, back in the 50s, they had different, you know, what you saw back then is definitely less risque than what you see nowadays. But, Steve, I want to... Before, we only have about 5 minutes left, and you've got a website. It's Radio Free. Is it RadioFreeSteve.com?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Now, if people are looking for this movie, because we get a lot of replays on this, hundreds of replays, so if folks are interested in buying a copy of this DVD, apparently they could go to that website, right?
Yes, sir. It's for sale on the website, RadioFreeSteve.com, and... just for the record, I don't make a dime off of any of that stuff because I no longer control the rights,
okay,
which is a whole other story. But
was that Lars von Beers who took the rights from you?
That is correct, sir.
Well,
sir.
Now, can you tell us quickly, how did he come about? I mean, I saw in the movie that he got involved. You met him, and you told him about the film, and he agreed to see it. But what happened from there?
Well, he kind of took my movie and ran. That's what I'd say. Because I met him in the late 90s. I was making video duplicates of one of his movies. He's a European guy. I think of him as like a Viking huckster director. He's directed his own movies. I guess people watch them over there. I don't get them, but I guess some people like them somewhere. And he said, "Hey, I want to help you finish your movie," but he said it with a real thick accent. And I said, "Well, I was floating on clouds upon butterflies upon flying, you know, banshees." And I thought I was like, "Hey, let's do it." And he put it out, and we went to film festivals, and people liked it, and then nothing happened. We didn't get distribution, but he still, you know, kept putting, you know, trying to do stuff with it. He added a bunch of music of bands that are cool, neat bands like Mr. Mister,
mm-hmm.
and Boards of Canada,
mm-hmm.
all these like Eurotrash bands I've never heard of, but he spent all this money on the music licensing, so he controls all that. I'm not a lawyer. I can't afford a lawyer, so I don't know what the deal is. Basically, he says he put all this money into it, so it's his now. I don't agree with that. But
yeah, it's pretty tough to when you know.
Still, I'm happy people see it. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's my heart and soul went into that movie, and if people watch it, I'll be.
Well, you made it in 1984, and here we're talking about it in 2007, and
yeah.
It'll be around for another 20. So, you know, it's pretty interesting, you know, when you have a movie out there, and as you just said, you made it. So.
Yeah, who'd have thunk it? You know, I mean, I'm a little pudgy guy from San Angelo, Texas, you know, who's got a, you know.
Who went to DeVry, you know.
Went to DeVry, and now I'm looking for work. By the way, I am looking for a job if anybody needs.
Well, anybody out there, Steve's in, Steve, where are you in Texas,
I'm in
right?
San Angelo, Texas.
In San Angelo, Texas.
But you can reach me through this website.
Okay.
RadioFreeSteve.com. There's all kinds. You can write. There's all kinds of. I think my email's on there.
Okay.
I think I get Lars' email too. So
uh-huh.
If you email Lars. I don't know. But it worked. You can get me on there, and I am looking for work. You know, Web 4.0. I know how to make web pages, like tables. And stuff.
HTML and that stuff.
Well,
right.
You heard that, folks?
HTML and DSS and QSL.
Well, you're definitely pretty talented, Steve, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I would love to get into Web 4.0 whenever that starts. I'm like, because I figure that's going to be the next game in town. And I want to be there, so I'm ready. I've got the skills and the experience. I've got life experience, a lot of it.
Well, you got a lot of it just making this movie, right?
That's true. It was more than it was two lives worth.
Yeah. Well, now okay, because we're getting close to India. Well, first, I got two things. Elliot, are you still on the line with us, Elliot?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, Elliot, do you have another question or thing for Steve?
No, I'm good right now. Just thank
okay.
you. I appreciate you coming
hey,
on.
Elliot, I got a question for you. You saw this movie?
Yes, sir.
Did you like it?
I did. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, that's real neat. It's real neat to hear that.
That's cool. Yeah.
You know, I mean, God bless you.
You know, one of my favorite scenes was the breakdancing scene, by the way. I absolutely love that scene.
Yeah, that was real. That turned out real good. I mean, that was one of the new parts in the movie. They shot out at that Burning Man deal in the Nevada desert with all these naked people. And I liked that part about it. And then they found this breakdancing guy. And I mean, I was there when they shot all that because that was the new stuff with my double. My stand-in for anyway, that gets real confusing. But that looked like a fun time. That's for sure. I heard there was all kinds of stories about, you know, naked people and guys with shirts on but no pants. I mean, why wear the shirt? You know, why not just go full on in the buff if you're going to do it.
If you're going to do it, go all the way.
Put on either, you know, put on some pants or just, you know, take off the shirt. It's a pretty simple deal.
Well, the guy there in the little bright pink Speedo, he sure took that take your pants off line to heart.
Yeah. Well, that guy, I met that guy, strangely enough. And at the Celebration 2007, the Star Wars convention this year in Los Angeles. That was a real, wow, I met that guy. I mean, accidentally. We didn't even, and he was wearing a Speedo then. I mean, that's just how that guy lived. He had some Darth Maul face paint on, but he was in a Speedo.
That's an image I could have done without, I'm afraid, Steve.
Yeah, well, me too. Let me tell you, I could erase that memory, I would.
Yeah, I mean, you have that one. When Mike shows him in the movie, you actually, Slubber's, I wondered who was behind the camera, because there was that crotch shot before they showed the rest of the guy.
Yeah.
Oh, he's doing the filming. Was that you, Steve?
No, I was not there. I think that was Lars, camera guy. I think his name was Levi or Levy something. I don't know. I had my suspicions at that moment about that guy's, you know, which way he swung. You know what I mean? I had my suspicions. I was like, well, as long as it doesn't reflect on me, I'm okay with it. Reaper? What?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Who's going next?
So Steve, once you got to Los Angeles, I guess that was at the end of the movie. What was, once you got to L.A., I mean, I guess the movie, you're wrapping up there.
Yes, sir.
What's that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, what I was saying was, once you got to L.A., I guess, how much long, what was the process after you filmed this movie? What did you have to add any, like, special effects, anything, you know, the sound?
The whole enchilada.
Yeah.
Thrown at this thing. I supervised the effects.
Yeah.
I have a video toaster set up at my place. It runs on Amiga, but they didn't want to use that, and they used they did like After Effects thing, which I didn't know about. I tried to do a whole bunch of effects. I did some of the effects. Some of them are in there, but because I actually tried to finish some of this movie with what I had doing. I invented non-linear editing before it was called that. I called it CompuCutting.
CompuCutting.
CompuCutting, and because I had a. Me and this guy that I knew from DeVry, we built this rig out of with a TI-99 and a Commodore 64, hooked up, and we had 10,000 floppy disks, 5.5-inch floppy disks, and we digitized 26.7 frames on each floppy disk, and then we had a garage of floppy disks, basically. And every time you wanted to make a shot, you had to, like, load up the floppy disk, and then you would ride out to this 1-inch tape as you went. And so you had to, like, remember what was on each floppy disk. But you could look at it, but it was, like, 16-bit, 256 colors of each frame. So I tried to work with that, and I added, like, wipes and stuff. You know, where it goes from one, like, it looks like the one side of the movie is pushing the other side of the movie off the screen. I thought I invented that, but it turned out those have been around. And there was some kind of blue screen sort of stuff they did, but I didn't do that. I wouldn't even know how to go about doing that without a weatherman set up, you know?
Well, I had a question about the van.
They use Grass Valley. You know, that's what I worked on, but I don't know if those are around. Yes, the van.
Oh, the van, yeah. I wanted to... Does your mom still have that van? And what did she think about getting it back when the window, you know, you guys busted up the window, like, running over mutants?
I caught a lot of flack on that deal. She was, I didn't have any money to pay for it, so I had to go back to doing pedicures to pay off for that new windshield for Mom's van.
How many pedicures did you have to do to pay off that window?
Man, I couldn't even tell you. It was a lot of feet, a lot of corn.
Were you the only white guy working with, like, a bunch of Koreans or something?
Yeah, let me just put it this way. If I never hear the word paraffin again in my life, it'll be too soon. And nail files, I don't like that word. That's two words. And I don't like corns.
What does corn have to do with it?
Well, corn on your toes?
On your feet.
Yeah, corns on your feet.
Oh, okay.
Fungus, yeah. You know, like that green crud that grows under there, and those old lady feet with, like, varicose veins and cracks and all kinds of stuff. I mean, I thought about becoming a fortune teller, looking at people's feet, if that would have taken off. But when I mentioned that to somebody, the response wasn't too good. So, the van, I think it was around for a while, and I think my mom sold it to a rock band.
Okay.
Might still be out there.
Okay, guys, we're running way over right now. We're going to wrap things up now.
I want to go for another hour, dude.
I wish we had time, but our live feed's already over, so we're gonna, you know, Steve. I'm glad you came on today. It's interesting to see a film like this, especially it brings back me a lot of memories. You know, I kind of grew up in the '80s, so it's kind of interesting. It's kind of retro for me to see some of those, you know, the same caricatures that, you know, you kind of, you know, the old kind of punk style, the 1980s stuff style. And, you know, it was a fun movie. It's a fun movie, and I'd recommend it for folks. It's a lot of fun to watch, and it's a pretty interesting premise, you know, a guy coming out of the, a post-apocalyptic wasteland, you know, broadcasting from his van, you know, bringing, you know, radio and information to people. But again, I want to thank you for coming on, Steve.
Killing mutants.
And killing mutants, that's right.
Yeah.
And again, you can go to www.radiofreesteve.com. You can also get in touch with Steve there from his website. And again, if you're looking for a good audio-video guy or a web publisher, please give Steve a call. Steve, I'm going to let you go here, and I appreciate you coming on. And hopefully in the future, if you have any other endeavors happening or something, keep in touch, and we'll have you back on the show again, okay?
Hey, guys, thank you, and I appreciate it. And may the love of the Lord shine upon you and bless you and keep you and keep you in his heart and all that.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, sir.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Steve.
Okay, Quiet Earth, it's just you and me, but that was a good interview. It was pretty interesting. Steve's a pretty neat fellow there, and I know he had an interesting story behind this movie.
Yeah, this is... Go see this movie, people. It's great. Well, actually, I can't say go see it because it's not anywhere. Go buy this movie, okay? Yeah, there you go. Anyway, we're going to be having up... we're going to be putting up a review of it later tonight, including a link to this interview, which, geez, I wish could last for another hour. It was so great. I didn't even get to a fraction of the questions I wanted to about the film or about even his story. So, Elliot, are you still online?
Elliot, he's not on right now.
Okay.
But it was pretty interesting, like you said. I know we could have probably gone on and on, and we just touched on a little bit of the movie. But, you know, like I said, hopefully, we'll try to maybe have Steve back on another time, and then we'll get some of his other questions. But all in all, though, I think people got a good taste of Radio Free Steve and kind of what, you know, like I said, it's, you know, the general, I mean, he made this movie on the money he was able to earn doing, doing odd job, you know, doing this and that. And so he raised just enough money to film the movie. So, and also he had to borrow the equipment to do it. So, you know, this guy, he went out and he made a movie. Like he said, he said he watched Mad Max and if those guys can do it, I could do it too. And, you know, I admire it. That's what I told him. You know, it's pretty cool that you can go out there. Not only you just talk about it, he went out there and did it. So, you know, it's like I said, it's a post-apocalyptic movie, definitely. If you definitely interested in the post-apocalyptic, you know, like it's comedy too. So it's a cool little flick, you know, to pop in there and sit back and, you know, I don't know, I mean, we drink an adult beverage or something, and you know, you'll enjoy it.
Okay. Anyway, folks, we're gonna have, like I said, we're gonna have a review up later tonight. www.quietearth.us. So tune in, folks. Whatever. The show was great. Yeah. Steve Glenn is great. We got to have him back on the show. I'm sure we could talk to that guy for like 3 hours. So, thanks,
okay.
Steve.
All right, Quiet Earth. You have a good night. I'll talk to you. We'll do another great show next week, okay?
Bye, folks. Night.
Have a good night. Yeah.
again. Don't. Again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. Again, don't know where.